This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Right On, showcasing the work of Otago Southland writers. I'm Beverly Martins. Join me for news and interviews with local writers on the second Wednesday of every month from noon till 1 and replayed the following Sunday at 1 p.m. Right On is brought to you by the Otago Southland branch of the New Zealand Society of Authors and kindly supported by the great team at the University Bookshop.
What do you want to be when you grow up? They say you are what you read, and the University Bookshop can help you be whoever you want to be. Do you want to be an athlete? Then sit down with an inspiring sports biography. Do you fancy yourself as a detective? We have a grisly lineup of murder mysteries waiting just for you. Do you aspire to be the world's greatest chef? We have cookbooks to tantalise your taste buds. Do you want to celebrate your inner child? Play up in our fabulous children's room. The University Bookshop, helping you decide what you want to be when you grow up.
Hello. Welcome to Write On. My guest this month is our new 2026 Burns Fellow. So welcome to Dunedin and welcome to the show, Rachel O'Neill.
Beverly, kia ora. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Now, I'd like to know first what your previous associations with Dunedin are.
So this is my first time living for an extended period in Otipoti. So it feels quite exciting to come and sort of live in the city. Previously, I've visited and I have collaborated over the years with a range of Dunedin-based artists and writers. So it's kind of great to come back sort of build on some of those earlier relationships and collaborations.
Now, I know that you like walking, and we've plenty to offer about that, you know, with that here in Dunedin. Sorry, I was just having a bit of a technical glitch there.
No problem.
There was some weird echo going on.
We've disbanded the echo and yeah.
It's all good now. Sorry, you've got my full attention now, Rachel and listeners. Right. So, just thinking about your walking that you love to do. Obviously, you're going to, you know, be able to go through the town belt here, the Botanic Gardens of Peninsula and beyond. But what I want to know is I think this really helps with your creative practice, doesn't it?
Yes. So when I was the 2023 Randall Cottage Writing Fellow, I had the opportunity to live and work in Thorndon for 6 months. And I wanted to, inject life back into my practice again. So what I decided to do was to develop a listening practice. And I would go around the city with my phone, my audio recorder, and I would sort of collect sounds, interesting sounds from around the local area. And what I would do is I would use these sounds to build sound design works that would create a kind of audio image. That's a phrase I'm borrowing from Robert Frost. He talked about audio images, but images that sort of start as sound. And we can think of sound in an expanded sense as including things like vibration or texture as well. These sound design works are quite kooky, but they...
We like kooky.
Yeah, for some reason, sensory experience, including sound, it sort of opens a portal in my imagination that's maybe a bit more direct. So that I can sort of access memories and experience. And what my poems tend to do is to take all that sort of grounded sensory experience in quite surreal directions, which maybe we'll see a bit later when I read one of my poems. But walking, became part of my practice of collecting found sounds and even found instruments. So playing leaves and seeds and playing in that sense.
Because I know, I think it's just a more conventional writer. We are listening all the time, you know, on the bus, on the street. I just heard an interesting, someone was on a phone and saying something along the lines of, well, your family and I'm doing it for free, or I'm doing this for free, but your family and you're the one with the money. And I was just,
yes. Yep.
That's a story.
Yes, and that's such a good point, the emphasis on listening. So, often we think of perhaps writing and storytelling as about delivering a message or sort of broadcasting or communicating something. However, it's quite intersubjective and we're listening and the reader's listening and, it's a valuable part of communication.
So how does that tie in with, because I'm a, sort of the sounds that you're talking about are non-verbal. Mm. They are what we would probably think as background sounds, but you're bringing them to the foreground. What about, how does that temper with something else that you really kind of believe in your creative practice, which is solitude, or do you get that solitude by walking?
That's a very good question. I think the kinds of, for example, one poem in the new book that I'm working on is called, mentioned it earlier, it's just called The Lantern of Fear Sausage Sizzle. And it's based on an experience up at the Wellington cable car where a young boy was manning a sausage sizzle up there. And he just had this way of asking punters, what would you like on it? And, it sounded like you could ask for anything. beginning with that kind of dynamic, I then was also researching 19th century phantasmagoria, which was a form of horror theatre that was popular in the 19th century. It's a very, the poem is a very macabre sausage sizzle. Mm. I think blending ordinary experience that's quite relatable, the Kiwi barbecue or the sausage sizzle fundraiser, and then something a bit more surreal. And there's in the poem there's a competitive element because there's competing phantasmagorical sausage sizzler youngsters.
I love the way these words just trip off your tongue, Rachel. I don't think I'd say that word. Now, is this a poem that's completed and you're happy to read it now, or is it something that you're working on? Or?
It is. It was published in Landfall a few issues ago, so I can definitely
read
that.
Well, I think rather than, because concepts are one thing, but I think if we can hear the poem, we'll probably be more in touch with your work for those of us who don't know you so well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that would be really good. Thank you.
Yeah. So here we go. The Lantern of Fear Sausage Sizzle. The kid on the grill is good, technically a bit quotational. I suspect the use of Pepper's ghost. Yeah, he's definitely off stage, brightly lit and using a mirror projection. Still, each time his illusion flips a sausage, my mouth waters. Given the Machiavellian length of the queue, he prefers to warm punters up by way of enforced fasting rather than drugs or the fatigue of a night sizzle performed in total and murderous darkness. Note the dog sniffing the Radcliffean tongs. Could it be an expansion of Benjamin on Marx, where the phantasmagorical supremacy of the commodity is stripped of hierarchy not by means of thunder, aromatic smoke, or a glass harmonica, but caramelised onion? What would you like on it? The shade of the 11-year-old charlatan asks, with the weariness of a despotic archduke facing expulsion from Prussia. Squirting red sauce on the bread, he deftly removes his head from his neck and places it by the serviettes before putting it back on again. But this is nothing compared to what he pulls off outside the wedding expo with some skeletal doves, a ghost groom, and a palace with a broken wheel, leading to police intervention and a heart attack of bridesmaids, described by one journalist as terribly mathematically exact.
It's very gothic, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, we're a gothic city. You're going to like this. You're going to like living here for a while. Now, I know that you regard yourself above all as a poet, Rachel, but you're also a filmmaker, a writer, and an artist, primarily based in Wellington. You've got two books of poetry and a long-form narrative poem concept album to your name in the creative writing field. I know you've been in, you know, done films and things in other fields. So what do you plan to focus on this coming year?
Yes, so I began as a visual artist and a creative writer. And then about 10 years ago, it struck me that I needed to bring them together and pursue film as well. And I think because film is very collaborative. So while I'll be focusing on completing my next book and beginning my fifth book, which will be a bit different, a verse novel, collaboration remains an important part of my practice. And while I'm here, I will be, I'm really looking forward to meeting other artists and other people doing cool things. Doing a range of collaborations and probably a few public programs while I'm here as well.
Fantastic. We love the public programs. I mean, that is the brilliant thing about, you know, the Arts Fellowships is that the community, you know, we sort of give it to you, but you always give back, and then that remains sort of part of the canon. I do feel it's slightly unfortunate timing for you in that you are such a collaborative practitioner, and yet sadly with the funding woes, this is the year that actually only the Burns Fellowship and the Caroline Plummer Dance Fellowship are going ahead. And I just think, gosh, there's a bit of sadness there. I mean, I'm feeling it on your behalf because there's no Mozart Music Fellow and there's no Francis Hodgkins Visual Arts Fellow. And I just think they would have, you know, you would have been all over it.
Yes.
Yeah. So do you have other practitioners, you know, do you have other things in mind, or are you just going to kind of see how it goes and reach out? And
yes. As I touched on right at the beginning, I have been lucky to collaborate with artists and writers based in Otipoti probably in the last sort of 15 years. So while I haven't spent any length of time here recently, I'm just sort of looking forward to sort of connecting with some of those artists, but also meeting people I haven't met before. And for example, the Carolyn Plummer Fellow, Jeremy Beck, I am yet to meet him, but his projects sound absolutely
they're very community
based, and also just amazing. I think there's inspiration abounds here in Otipoti, and so I'll bring some of my collaborations with me, and
some will just evolve. I think that organic way of doing things is great, and you're right, absolutely right, there's connections everywhere, and we are a pretty I would say we're more collaborative than competitive in the sort of creative space here in Dunedin, because I think we're a long way from the bigger centres. And
yes, I certainly feel that. Collaboration and pooling communal creative energies.
Now, I understand across all your works, what you sort of strive to convey is the humour, candidness and strangeness of the human experience, and I think we've just sampled a little bit of that strangeness in your incredibly visual poem. But can you unpack that a little bit about why those three sort of tenets are kind of interest you so much?
I think there's something about the mystery of life and human experience and of relating to each other. Of course, there's so much that we do know through the wonderful minds and research that others have brought. We can build on that. However, we're still asking a lot of those bigger questions about what is the purpose of life and experience and our relationships. So I think making strange is just a simple way for me to sort of honour what we know and what we don't know. I think that is a way that we also can affirm trust. So when I think about how individuals build trust and what the foundation of that is, I think, well, it's about us being unflinchingly honest about who we are and where we come from and what has and hasn't happened between us. And the whole the whakapapa of that, so past and present, there's also through dynamics like humour, what do we share, what don't we share, I think relating through some of those big questions and mysteries that also shape our experience. I guess all those layers, I think, contribute to trust and faith in each other and this, potential we always have to sort of build healthier alternative realities whilst also, building on where we've come from and being accountable to that.
I think you're absolutely right about trust, and alongside that is candor. And I think that is probably the one of the key roles of being a creative.
Yes,
is to be candid. Is to take a big gulp and say or do it anyway.
Yes,
because I think within that candidness is builds trust, because what it does is saying, well, look, I don't know, but this is my experience or this is my interpretation, and if I put it out there, then it makes it relatable for other people, and other people can say, oh, thank God, that's how I was feeling, or
yes,
or be encouraged to share their experience,
yes,
because they no longer feel alone and they understand that their voice is valid,
yes,
or their point of view is valid. So I think that candidness and trust go, one builds the other.
Absolutely. You're so right. Candidness, it's a way of being emotionally honest and true. And something I've noticed through this practice of listening is the importance of being present. So you and I are talking together right now. We're sharing space, and we could have a whole structured plan of how we might reach some deep nugget of wisdom. But generally, we simply come together and through connecting and being ourselves, we sort of bump into those things. And
I don't think structure produces deep nuggets.
No,
ever.
No.
I think you're just open to, I've got my notes here, but I'm just responding to you and vice versa. And
yeah,
I think that makes for, a much more authentic conversation.
Yes.
So now, with your lovely big words, there was one that I had to look up, which was contrapuntal.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, which is a word that you've used and not one that I'd come across before. So can you kind of explain that and why it's important to you and your work?
Yes, thank you. My most recent book is called Symphony of Queer Errands, and it's about a composer who's challenged to write a symphony made out of found material. And they work with an orchestra of completely invented instruments. So they're quite zany and weird. And
can you give us an example of one?
The first instrument is the Hard Soft Revolt, which is a pianoforte made of parts in revolution. And the strings aren't plucked or hammered, they're guillotined.
Oh, no.
So, there's also a section of Little Dreamies, which are like unconscious piccolos, and they work through the veil of the unconscious. So you have to have very delicate hands as the performer. You don't want to wake them unnecessarily. Also a section of anti-gaslighting bowls. Yes, we like healthy forms of conflict and arts experiences which encourage us to connect rather than isolate. So if an artwork is a bit abusive, these anti-gaslighting bowls get to work and sort of drown out that bad noise.
I can't help thinking that you are going to love going up to Oamaru.
Yes.
You know, the steampunk sort of capital of New Zealand. But I'm afraid for you if you go up there, because we'll never see you again. Because, you know, there's a lot of that kind of juxtaposition, gothicness and old and new and zaniness and everything all in there, isn't there?
Yes.
I'd say that would really appeal to you.
I'll have to just book my trip back.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, return ticket only, thank you.
But in terms of the contrapuntal form, that sort of emerged out of the book structured a bit like a symphony is. So there's various movements. And contrapuntal form in music is a bit different than in poetry. In music, you have different harmonies that are interacting. In poetry, it's simply you have two contrasting texts. You bring them together, and that creates a third text from the relationship between those two initial texts. So that's something that I also played with in the book. And indeed, there are even, in fact, two symphonies in the book. So the first one with the found material doesn't quite work out. So the composer has to sort of go back and create a second symphony that I think, as you were saying, has more candor, that is more emotionally honest. So these two symphonies, my hope is that they also work contrapuntally and create a third experience that actually sits in the reader. So the reader is perhaps the third contrapuntal symphony, bringing these different experiences together.
So it sounds like, to me, the two key concepts in there are sort of style in the first one and content in the second one. And I know that you're very interested in and mindful of creating an experience for the reader. That's kind of your bag, isn't it?
Mm.
So, you know, even how things look on the page, everything is quite a considered decision. Why is that so important to you?
I think it goes back to collaboration. So as a writer, I see myself collaborating with the reader. So the reader always brings their own set of experiences and values. It's about creating space for potentially things like the the next book, I'm including what I'm calling shape poems, which are poems that have a visual component on the page.
I think concrete poems can be another word for that.
Yes. Yeah. And this hopefully allows the reader to sort of contribute to some of the rhythms and the pace and ultimately the meaning of the poem as they navigate that reading. I think just, in a simple sense, I think success, say, however you define that, and hopefully we all have a different sort of definition for what that means, but I think success is collective, it is collaborative, The more we can create those kinds of conditions where we can come together and pull our energies and ideas and values and lean into, oh, I won't say lean in, but
it's too huffing and post,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, we can activate and catalyze. There's a Confucian idea where we all have innate dignity because all human beings are born with moral capacity. And then you can develop acquired dignity, which is where you develop your moral capacity. And that can be through things like your relationships or creativity or simply, you know, doing developing your talents. There's something about that is, our acquired, expanding our acquired dignity.
Which is about sort of how things land and how they resonate, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, you've got some terrific, great vocab, but also some terrific turns of phrase. And one of them that you talk about that I've read in my research was seeking the music of the moment. Mm. That does not mean Taylor Swift or Bad Bunny.
It could do.
But can you,
no judgment.
Can you tell me what it means to you personally and within your practice?
I think it goes back to what we discussed earlier about being present and in the moment through the listening practice I developed. That was, I guess, the question that helped encapsulate that. So I guess thinking about the intimacies of place and sensory experience, I could ask, I might simply be recording the sound of a frog or a bee landing on a flower in the rain. But in a way, that was also, say, in the particular site of the Botanic Gardens, and that has a specific history. So early sort of settler colonial graveyard was there. And that was cleared for the motorway. So there is also nearby a mass grave.
Mm. This is in Wellington.
In Wellington, yeah. Mm. So I think what is the music of the moment? Thinking about place and what has and hasn't happened between us. It includes those considerations as well. And I think it's important in this moment that. We understand what's brought us here and also be present with each other and I think understand what it is we really care about that's what we go on to bat for. There's a lot of noise and distraction that we're a lot of active resistance to harm as well. However, it's important to remember what do we value, what do we care about, and what are we here to protect as well.
And I think that's what the Burns year gives you, doesn't it? It gives you a gap. A lovely, funded gap so that the financial stuff can drop away for a while.
Yes.
And you can truly focus on the things that you want to achieve and what might come out of having that time and space.
Absolutely.
So have you got a burning question or theme that you're exploring this year?
Oh, good question. I've talked a little about the next book I'm working on, which includes prose poems like The Lantern of Fear Sausage Sizzle, based on some of that sensory experience. And the longer narrative poems with the visual elements. My fifth book, it's going to be quite different again, and it will be a science fiction verse novel set 200 years in the future in planetaria around the world. And what I'm interested in exploring through that book is how potentially the process of grief can take us from a position or feeling of isolation. And through that kind of leap of faith or courage to take a step or to, some people might phrase it, to go on alone, that feeling that we might be going on alone, that in fact it allows us to enter a larger collective sense of belonging. That process of feeling like we're going on alone, but in fact we're potentially releasing attachment from the person or the thing we've lost, which of course is very hard. However, what we gain is a greater sense of our connection to all of life and other people as well. So, I think there's something in there for me about how that can help us in this present moment where we are losing a lot of people and a lot of things that give us a sense of foundation or that can, they're like portals to love perhaps. what happens, when we, how do we love things even as we're losing them? And what does the process of grief teach us and how can we get through that together?
And in a way, that's the daunt and the delight of this Burns year too, is because you are sort of going on alone. You're not living where you normally live. Mm. You're in a different city. You're in a different headspace. You're around different people. So that's quite a, you're going to sort of feel that quite keenly sometimes, I would think.
Absolutely. It does feel like a bit of a turning point in my life and career, and I think that will inform the work as well.
I do too. Now, what? How do you fill your creative cup? I mean, who and what are your primary influences, Rachel?
Oh, this is a very hard question.
Do top three.
I think my friends and family are probably they fill my cup the most, particularly collaborations as well. That's just breathes life into me. And then I think just opportunities to connect with the world around me. I mentioned walking and, I'm just delighted in how many beautiful trees there are in Aotearoa. I feel like I'm meeting all the amazing trees. And of course, I just love art in all forms. So, just listening to music, watching films, going to the theatre, especially I think cross-disciplinary or conversational artworks across different forms, I find that quite inspiring.
Top readers? I mean, writers that you read? Yeah. Is there a couple that you could pull out that we might relate to? Or
I always find this terribly difficult, but I will say just I feel so privileged to be writing in the community of sort of poets, fiction writers, non-fiction writers here in Aotearoa. All the work that is coming out is extremely inspiring, and it feels like we are all enjoying being in conversation as well. I think, as you touched on, competition isn't actually conducive to creativity, That feels like a wonderful aspect of the communities here, is that, we can all enjoy and be inspired by what each other is doing. And, I also think we need to make efforts to for greater equity in relation to arts funding and, look at other solutions. I belong to a range of different unions in the creative arts. And sometimes I think, wow, what if we had a union that covered all the arts so that we could sort of advocate and lobby? And, or, you know, I have strange ideas, like what if we had a bank for artists? So I think there's definitely practical things that I you know, want to be a part of, as well as the sense of community as well.
Brilliant. Thanks, Rachel. Wish you all the best for the year ahead, the richness you'll add to the city, and the way that we can collaboratively support you. And we'll look forward to seeing where it leads you creatively, which is great. You don't quite know that yet, and you know you need not to know to remain curious, I think. Now, speaking of creative outputs, though, I've asked you to choose a Kiwi music track to sort of wrap things up with.
Yes.
This is not an artist that I know about. I know it's a very recent song, I think, out of Wellington. But would you mind giving us an intro and a context to it before we play it, please?
Yes. So it's this wonderful track called Decay from an album that came out last year called Blame It on the Weather by Ma. And the song Decay is in collaboration with another artist. So this is just the brief band camp description, which on the album opener and single Decay, Ma traverses borders and oceans, connecting to Mata Waiuhi, a multidisciplinary Oglala Lakota artist from South Dakota. They trade indigenous perspectives on home, land and sea over acoustic guitar figures, tough hip hop breaks and taonga poro. And I chose this track, I think, because recently we had Waitangi Day, and I tuned into Te Ao Māori News to watch the dawn service, the karakia, and I was just reminded of all the people and all the relationships that are reflected across time through Te Tiriti o Waitangi. Was an experience that reminded me that our future is through Te Tiriti o Waitangi,
Shall we play it?
Yeah, and I think maybe it just made me think, yes, every day is Waitangi Day.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rachel. Such an interesting conversation that we've had. So here it is now. Here's Ma playing Decay. Gosh, wasn't that a great stimulating conversation? So I'm just going to sort of back announce the titles of Rachel's poetry book, should you care to look them up. The first one was One Human Height. Her second collection is called Requiem for a Fruit, and then the long narrative symphony poems book is called Symphony of Queer Errands. And so to get a flavour of that, I suggest you look up Rachel's website, which is Rachel, RACHEL-ONEILL.com. So that's rachel-o'neill.com, and listen to more of her poems. And I'll be back shortly with some announcements of what's some fabulous events that are happening in the next few days here in Dunedin. So we were talking about the things that will fill your ways to fill your own creative cup, because that's just so important to backfill kind of the things that you need to inspire and keep you going after you've kind of blurted it all out on the page, so to speak. So firstly, we have the poetry event tonight. It's the first one for the year for the Otago Poetry Collective, and they meet at the New Athenaeum Theatre in the Lower Octagon, the NAT as it's colloquially known. And as I said, this is the first event for the year, so there'll be the open mic and all the usual things. But there's a couple of guest poets, one of which is John Russell Hodge. Now, you remember I interviewed John back in December before he took up the University Bookshop summer writing residency. Well, those 6 weeks have flown by, and his reading tonight is his swan song before he, I think, reluctantly leaves Dunedin and heads back to Waimate to finish working on the book of poems that him and his mentor have been fine-tuning over the 6 weeks that he's been here. So that is Octagon Poetry Collective tonight at 7 o'clock. Now, next is something that's, weather permitting, going to be a fabulous spectacle on this weekend, this romantic Valentine's weekend, and it is called Shakespeare and Love Songs. So it's at the Botanic Gardens, the sound shell there at the Botanic Gardens, on both Saturday and Sunday, 3 o'clock on both days. It's absolutely a free event, and it's got a stellar cast, some interesting musical interpretations of Shakespeare's songs, because often they get dropped out of his plays simply for length. Sometimes they, as Kim Morgan, the director, says, they're the first to go. So she has taken an interest in bringing them back and sharing them with a wider audience. So it'll be light-hearted and romantic. So bring your picnic and enjoy that event. That's Shakespeare Love Songs at the Botanic Gardens. And then also on Sunday at 3 o'clock is a different kind of celebration, potentially slightly darker, but also incredibly important, because it is the launch of the debut novel of local writer Breton Jokes. So Breton is an unflinching writer, I believe, in terms of talking about what it means in the here and now to be a Kiwi man, a Kiwi father, a Kiwi husband, and all the unsavoury side of the things that they go through, which sort of shape how they act in those roles. This, ironically, the title of this novel, which is his first novel after a couple of short story collections, is called Party Boy. And so that's absolutely where you're going to find me this Sunday afternoon at Wolf Bar in the lower Stewart Street. It's free, but of course I urge you to buy the book, because not for nothing is Newsroom, the online arts website, writing interviews. There's an interview with Breton, but they're also doing related feature articles about Party Boy all this week. So that's how much attention they're giving it, and quite frankly, who would blame them? Because I love Breton's writing, but I think Party Boy is going to be as seminal as Once Were Warriors by Alan Duff. And I don't say that lightly. And I haven't read the book yet, but I'm pretty sure that that's the way it's going to pan out. So Breton has written three terrific short story collections, including What Sort of Man, which was my favourite of the three for me personally. And you may remember, listeners, that I interviewed him back on the show in November of 2024 when he was about to go up to Auckland to hole up at the Surrey Hotel for a few days of a short but important paid residency to enjoy the gift of time and space to work on this very book. And look, now here we are. So if you can't make that launch at WOOF on Sunday at 3 o'clock, then do pop into UBS for your copy, because it will be a book that will be challenging to read but incredibly important as well. And now we come to my tricky goodbye, as this is my final show. I'm hanging up the headphones after hosting the show for the past 2.5 years, diligently wearing the headset of my predecessor, crime writer Vanda Simon, who hosted it for a mere 18 years before that. So big thanks to her for coming up with the idea on behalf of the local branch of the Society of Authors, in wanting to earnestly give our local writers a promotional voice, and which I too have done to my best to honour in the 30 programs that I have produced and hosted. And I was sort of reflecting back on some of the standout interviews in that time, and some of them I will just name check now, although pretty much all of them have been great, apart from some of my technical glitches sometimes. But the key ones, some of the key ones for me have been Dr. Chris Brickell on the Robert Lord Diaries, Tracy Slaughter for writing unflinching poetry and teaching us as well how to tackle it too. Hannah Bullock on the extraordinary story of her forebears in her creative nonfiction book, Overland to the Island. And then some just completely charming ones like Liz Jack, who spoke about her darling mother, the romance writer and doyenne of that genre, Essie Summers. Then they're just to name a few. So thank you also to UBS for underwriting the studio time. What a phenomenal oral archive we've created, capturing and championing creative writing here in Otapote. And finally, heartfelt thanks to the diligent community-focused team here at ORFM Dunedin. Leslie, Jeff H, Domi, Irina and Jeff B for your technical and other help. So this is me, Beverly Martins, urging you one last time to keep reading and keep writing, both of which I'll now have more time to do myself in this exciting new life chapter that I'm about to embark on. So thanks for listening and goodbye.
What do you want to be when you grow up? They say you are what you read, and the university bookshop can help you be whoever you want to be. Do you want to be an athlete? And sit down with an inspiring sports biography. Do you fancy yourself as a detective? We have a grisly lineup of murder mysteries waiting just for you. Do you aspire to be the world's greatest chef? We have cookbooks to tantalise your taste buds. Do you want to celebrate your inner child? Play up in our fabulous children's room. The University Bookshop, helping you decide what you want to be when you grow up.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.